I'm Joshua Pollock, author of The Heartfulness Way. Website of The Heartfulness Way is www.theheartfulnessway.com.
Speaking today with Joshua Pollock, author with Kamlesh Patel of The Heartfulness Way. You're really in demand these days, speaking about and teaching heartfulness meditation. I understand you go to Intel, Microsoft, Amazon, places like that, and they're clamoring to hear you.
I think they need some kind of relief. They're under so much pressure. I don't always think that meditation is something that people pursue because they're interested in the topic, but just because it's something that's done at need, I would say. People may start for any reason. They may be stressed out and they need to meditate. But then once they do meditate and they experience this, then I think a time also comes when they start to meditate for its own sake. So our reasons change as we go on.
How did you start? I understand you're a violinist.
Yeah, that's right. I found it really by accident. I was just walking down the street one day, and I just, you know, got into a conversation with a random stranger just outside a shop.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was this?
It was in Little Italy in Cleveland, Ohio, of all places.
Oh.
You know, the conversation just sort of got around to meditation at a certain point, somehow, and then found out that they meditate. I was also interested in it. What do you do? It's heartfulness. So then they said, well, I can introduce you to someone who can show you how to do it. So I tried it. And not immediately. A few months later, I got around to it. But then I thought, this is amazing. So I kept coming back.
I guess it was meant to be.
I guess so.
And your new book, The Heartfulness Way, with Kamlesh Patel, how did you come to collaborate with him?
He just called me up one day. I mean, I already knew him, but he called me up one day and asked me, he said, Josh, will you write a book about meditation? I said, sure. I never intended to write a book, you know? And so after, you know, I was thinking about it, and I next time he came to town, I went and I met him, and I asked him, what is your vision for this? Why are you asking me to write a book on meditation? So we started talking, and we talked a little more and a little more. And these conversations that we were having actually ended up becoming the book. It became a book of dialogues between us, where I ask him a lot of questions and he responds, you know, with his years of experiences and wisdom. So it's a book, really practical book about meditation, I would say. For those who actually want to do it, not just learn about it and satisfy curiosity, but who actually want to engage in this.
Your life sounds very serendipitous. You just learn about meditation walking down the street. Somebody calls you up to do a book. I guess that's the way it works sometimes.
Yeah, but my mom's always making fun of me for this, though.
It's not like you have a plan. The plan seeks you out.
Yeah, or I may have a plan, but some other plan seeks me out. So what to do about that?
So how is heartfulness different, would you say, from other meditations?
I tried many meditations before I ever came across heartfulness, right? And they were good. But then when I tried this, I thought, this is something different. There's something special about this. I was having a hard time identifying what it was. I knew that in a really intuitive way, that I just felt like I was at home the first time I sat and meditated like that. I also knew that I really went deep into this meditation in a way that I didn't know that it was possible within a few minutes. It was just this sort of profound state of something beyond peace. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that this was something unique. And so I kept coming back and trying, you know, to meditate for that reason. But I didn't understand, why is this the case? So my experience told me that this is something unique. This is something different. The cause of that, I didn't understand that. So it took a long time before I understood all the nuts and bolts, you know, the backroom things. But I think one's experience has to tell you and guide you.
Would it work for a person to be introduced to heartfulness meditation right at the get-go? Or would it be more helpful to have pursued other kinds of meditation before getting there? Or doesn't it matter?
I don't think it actually matters. You know, having meditated before in some other way may give you some sort of basis for comparison, where you can appreciate the difference more. But that isn't even necessary in order for the meditation to be effective. You not have done any other kind of meditation before. It's enough.
How would you say that heartfulness does differ? Is there anything about the actual implementation, the actual doing of it, that differs from other meditations?
Well, here I would say that this is not just one meditation. Heartfulness is sort of a small group of methods, really simple methods. And meditation is just one of them. You can kind of understand them. They're like the ingredients of a cake, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You have to put together all the ingredients properly, and then it has its effect. You just do one of them or two of them. They're not working together then, you know? So this has basically a couple basic ingredients. One of them is meditation. Another thing is something we call cleaning. This is a key one, and this is a unique feature. This cleaning is something that we do at the end of the day. We sit, close our eyes, perform this technique. As a result of performing this technique, we're able to sort of remove all of the sort of emotional baggage that we've accumulated throughout the day. The stresses, the reactions that we've had, with the emotions just stay in us and continue affecting how we feel, how we think, how we perceive the world around us. We just remove all of that. And so this is an enormous help. You know, when people talk about leaving the office behind, you know, leaving the office at the door, leaving work at the door when mm-hmm. you come home. Well, this is actually how you can do that. Remove the effects of the past. Gives us a lot of freedom. Makes us feel so light. So this is one unique thing, cleaning method. Another thing is something that we meditate with the support and help of a trainer. Now here I have to emphasize that though we have trainers who help us to meditate, this is something which is freely given. It doesn't cost anything. Now, when we meditate with a trainer, we're meditating with something which is called yogic transmission. This is, again, something that has to be experienced in order to be appreciated. It doesn't look like anything. They're sitting there meditating, you're sitting meditating, that's it. But somehow, in a very subtle way, they are guiding your meditation. Not with words, but in another way, using this old yogic technique. And I have to just say that this is what was causing those results that I experienced when I meditated for the first time, when I thought, this is incredible. So later I learned, oh, it's because of this thing called yogic transmission. But again, that's something where you have to experience it. Like, you never know, if you've never tried a mango, you're not going to be able to know what a mango tastes like. You have to try it to understand it.
I saw your Cleveland interview where you were talking about Phil Jackson and sports, and that was a very cool example. Could you talk about it now?
Yeah, well, I mean, Phil Jackson was, you know, he came to the Bulls. He believed in meditation. He tried to convince the Bulls to meditate. They didn't want to meditate. Then, you know, but they did want to win a championship. And they didn't win that first year with him. So then they thought, okay, well, maybe we should follow what he's saying. And they took it up. Now, they already had Michael Jordan on their team, you know, but that wasn't enough. So he taught them how to meditate. And after practicing that for 1 year, they started winning the championships. Right? He believes in it so much. He took it to the Lakers, too. You know, when he went to the Lakers, mm-hmm. they started winning also. Now, why was it the case? Why did this help them so much? Number one is, when you're performing under some kind of high-pressure situation, now, you need to be able to filter your thoughts. You need to be able to screen your thoughts. And you could have so many thoughts coming at you. You can have thoughts of anxiety or thoughts of pressure, or you can psych yourself out under these kind of circumstances, right? And meditation really enables you to be able to listen to what you need to listen to and ignore everything else. Right? Ignore all of those signals, ignore distractions, everything. So basically, it enables you to focus in that way. So it becomes extremely helpful. It doesn't matter what you're trying to do. Now, something else it does is it manages, I think, to help you control your ego. And if you're on a team, you know, or if you're in a family, right? Or, you know, if you're at a team, you know, at work, at your job, or basically whenever you're interacting with other people, you have to be able to bring your ego under control, because otherwise you get hurt, and then you react, and then there's fight. So this is something which also helps us so much. And isn't something where we say, get rid of your ego. No, this is something which makes us, you see, the ego is a tool, it's an instrument. It's something that we need, in fact. But when it's misused, that's when it becomes a problem. Let me just explain that. If you need to give a speech to 3,000 people, you need some ego. You need to think, yeah, I can do this. That confidence has to be there. So on a scale from 0 to 100%, you may need 90% ego at that moment. But then after the speech is done, now you've gone home, you're brushing your teeth. Do you still need 90% ego to brush your teeth? No. So then, you know, maybe you need 1%. The problem is when it stays at 90%, you don't need it. Then people say that guy's egotistical. Or the opposite problem, if it stays at 3% and you have to give that big speech to 3,000 people, now you don't have the confidence to be able to do it. So it needs to be flexible. It needs to match your level of activity. I mean, it has to come under our control. We're not under its control. So meditation helps with this.
That was great. Why do you think it just seems like the world is more ready to hear a lot of this now than it's been?
Well, wherever I don't know, because I don't know how it was before, but wherever I go, people are receptive. That much I can say. For whatever reasons, they're receptive. I don't think we've ever, you know, encountered any problem where we're not welcome, you know.
Yeah.
So it seems that people need something like this. Perhaps it's because the world is so hectic these days. You know, perhaps it isn't even the fact that it's so hectic that's the problem, but that we're getting oriented towards so many sort of conflicting values all at the same time, so many messages coming at us. And I think we're searching for something that's true and searching for something that's authentic. And that's something that the heart always can tell us. The heart can always tell me what is real, what's unreal, what's valuable, what's unnecessary. These types of messages, the heart knows. And when the more I can connect to the heart, listen to the heart, be sensitive to the heart, the more I'll be guided in my life, the more I'll be able to say, yes, do this, no, avoid that. So that's what meditation does. That's what heartfulness meditation does. It sensitizes us to that true inner voice, the voice of the heart, which also is the voice of our conscience.
Do you have any events scheduled in connection with your book?
I'm at the tail end of like a 40 or 50 city tour in the U.S.
Is that all?
Is that all? No, it's not all, because I did 22 cities in India before that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so tomorrow I'm actually going to Europe.
Oh, okay.
Starting there.
All right. Great. Great. Yeah. My goodness. You really sound calm and serene.
Well, you know, at least I sound that way.
Well, it was great talking to you. Anything else you want to add before we conclude?
You know, I would just encourage people to try something for themselves. This is not a philosophy. This is not belief. This is something like, if in the Heartfulness Way book, there's one example that's given that if you're going to take, let's say, a chemistry class in school, that class will probably be divided up into two segments. There'll be a lecture and there'll be a lab component, right? In the lecture, someone lectures you. They tell you what the principles are. Fine. But that's secondhand information. In the lab, you do the experiment yourself. You see for yourself how these principles work. That's first-hand information. That's first-hand knowledge. And that's knowledge that comes from your own experience. So that's what you can understand meditation is like, the lab component. That's when you understand the truth for yourself through your own experimentation. And here, you are the experimenter. You are the results of the experiment. And you are also the subject of the experiment. So meditation is like an experiment, and your heart is like the lab.
I like that example. That's great.